The head of Germany's Navy resigns after drawing criticism for rejecting Western claims that Russia plans to invade Ukraine as nonsense. A British lawmaker says she was fired from a ministerial job in Prime Minister Boris Johnson's Conservative government because of her Muslim faith. And millions of EU citizens and businesses are under pressure as a gas supply crunch to the bloc causes energy prices to soar. Welcome to the program. The head of Germany's Navy resigns after his comments on Russia drew strong criticism from Ukraine. K. Achim Schoenbach says the German defense minister has accepted his resignation. This comes after the vice admiral called Russia an important country, admitting that Vladimir Putin, quote, probably deserves respect. He had also said the West's claims that Russia is planning to invade Ukraine are, quote, nonsense. Kiev reacted by summoning Berlin's ambassador to protest the remarks. Germany has also enraged Ukraine by refusing to deliver arms to the country. Berlin says there is no consensus among German politicians over the matter. However, the U.S., Britain, and several Baltic states have agreed to provide Kiev with weapons. The first batch of the U.S. military aid arrived in Ukraine on Saturday.
The first shipment of U.S. military supplies has arrived in Ukraine. The military contingent is worth $200 million and includes ammunition. The delivery follows the conclusion of the latest round of talks between Washington and Moscow over Ukraine. Russian troops are massed on Ukraine's border, along with an arsenal of tanks, fighting vehicles, artillery, and missiles amid the U.S.-led NATO buildup near the border with Russia. Moscow has denied planning to invade Ukraine, but the White House believes an attack could come at any point. As the crisis escalates, EU leaders have become increasingly vocal in expressing their discontent at the exclusion from the diplomatic top table.
It's not just the US and Russia. If you want to talk about security in Europe, Europeans have to be at the table, and the agenda isn't just the issues Russia has put on the table.
Many believe that the EU is currently politically divided and lacks a unified approach on the Ukraine crisis. France's President Emmanuel Macron has said that the EU must open its own talks with Russia rather than rely on Washington. Macron hopes to revitalize four-way talks between Russia, Germany, France, and Ukraine, known as the Normandy format. However, the Baltic states bordering Russia seek a hawkish approach. On Friday, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania announced plans to send anti-tank and anti-aircraft missiles to Ukraine after receiving authorization from Washington. But Germany disagrees with this approach, with its defense minister Christine Lambrecht ruling out arms deliveries.
We have to do everything to de-escalate. Currently, arms deliveries would not be helpful in this respect. There is agreement on this in the German government.
The German defense minister says Ukraine will receive a complete field hospital together with necessary training in February. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz has stressed Berlin's policy of not supplying lethal weapons to conflict zones. Berlin is also under pressure from the US and other Western allies to stop the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which will carry Russian gas to Germany and the rest of Europe. EU and US leaders have time and again said the project should be halted if Russia attacks Ukraine. But Germany has warned against linking the natural gas pipeline and around with Moscow over Ukraine. Meanwhile, the EU was sidelined from talks held last week between Russia and the US, NATO, and the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. The EU has threatened Russia with severe economic sanctions if it attacks Ukraine, but the 27-member bloc is divided as to what should trigger sanctions. It seems that as the crisis over Ukraine keeps unraveling, the division among the EU states on one side and that between the EU and the US on the other side is becoming more evident and increasingly widespread.
A conservative British lawmaker and former cabinet member says she was sacked from a ministerial position because of being a Muslim. Nusrat Qani says she was told that her, quote, Muslimness was raised as an issue in her being fired as junior transport minister in a cabinet reshuffle in early 2020. Qani told the Sunday Times that the whip in charge of firing her said that the Muslim woman minister status was making colleagues uncomfortable. This echoes remarks from another British politician who accused the government of trying to intimidate and blackmail lawmakers opposing Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Several British politicians have voiced support for Ghani's cause, with a fellow Tory MP slamming the treatment as intolerable. Labour deputy leader has also expressed disgust over the matter. Political commentator Zafar Bangash says the British Prime Minister herself has, has openly expressed Islamophobia. Take a listen, please.
The British Prime Minister Boris Johnson himself has expressed Islamophobic statements very openly, and he has not apologized for them at all. And unfortunately, in Britain, Islamophobia is very much prevalent. It predates 9/11. In fact, the British have always been extremely racist, and in this particular juncture, they find Muslims to be an easy target and to divide people in Britain, so they have gone after Muslims and they spew these hateful remarks and denigrating remarks against Muslims, and in particular against Muslim women. So I'm not surprised at all. The fact is that, you know, as has been stated by other commentators, Islamophobia has basically passed the breakfast conversation test. That means it has become respectable. And we need to look at the broader picture, and that is that these Western governments are waging wars against Muslim countries, and so they need to continuously denigrate and humiliate Muslims because they have to present them as the enemy within, so that they can justify their illegal wars, whether it was against Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, you name it, Somalia, so many countries, Muslim countries in the world that have been targeted by them.
Soaring energy costs are putting millions of EU citizens and businesses under pressure. The European Commission is now admitting the bloc's energy market urgently requires major reforms. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
As COVID-19 restrictions are eased, millions across the EU are returning to work. However, many businesses are struggling to stay afloat due to rising energy prices. The pandemic has resulted in more people working from home than ever before. Their bills are also out of control. EU energy ministers met on Saturday to discuss the crisis.
Être plus efficace.
We need to be more efficient, better interconnected. We need greater solidarity when it comes to security of supply. We need to stop wasting energy and protect citizens from more energy poverty.
Consumers are angry at the EU for not being better prepared to ensure sufficient supplies. Governments in 22 of the 27 EU member states have taken temporary steps to try and support businesses and households, but so-called energy poverty continues to rise.
Many ministers mentioned how the situation beyond the EU eastern borders creates uncertainty on the markets and how the gas flows from Russia have dropped significantly in recent months.
But the European Commission acknowledges Russia has honoured all of its gas supply contracts. Moscow insists it's willing to supply more if new contracts are signed. This has already happened with Germany and Turkey, the Kremlin says. As was stated recently in the European Parliament, perhaps the best way to ensure energy security would be for the EU to stop using Ukraine to provoke Russia. This, as Ukraine is corrupt to the core and at the highest levels, according to the European Court of Auditors, which is the EU's financial watchdog. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Unrest growing in some European countries as governments are tightening mandatory coronavirus vaccine measures. People flooded the streets in fresh protests in the French capital, Paris. They chanted slogans against President Emmanuel Macron's COVID policies and a vaccination pass that was approved by Senate on Friday. As of January the 24th, people aged 16 and older will need to show proof of immunization to enter public places. In the UK, thousands marched in London to protest against mandatory vaccines for NHS workers. Public health workers are set to lose their jobs in April if they do not get immunized. Demonstrators also gathered in Sweden's capital to express opposition to Mandatory to the mandatory pass, the Swedish government has recently expanded its use of the pass. The highly contagious coronavirus, driven by the Omicron variant, continues to spread rapidly across the world, sending more people to hospitals and killing others. Russia's reported a record number of more than 57,000 new daily cases. Its total death toll from the pandemic also exceeded 325,000. Last week, President Vladimir Putin warned the country of a surge in cases and called for more testing and vaccinations. In Britain, health officials reported nearly 77,000 new infections and some 300 fatalities on Saturday. The Omicron variant is also wreaking havoc in Italy, where more than 171,000 new daily cases and 333 deaths were registered in the past day. It's been 7 years since the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution wrote two letters to the youth in Europe and North America, appealing to them to judge Islam and Muslims through the prism of their own unbiased research. Now, a British economics professor has written a seminal book in response to Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei's letters, unpacking their message and asking if Islam really is the solution to global problems. Saeed Pourreza has been to the book launch event and sent this report.
On behalf of the youth concerning justice for the world, a new paradigm response to the leader's letters to the youth in Western countries. The title of a 90-page book authored by retired British binary economics professor Rodney Shakespeare.
The book addresses the main issues for the world today. For example, there's massive inequality. There are preposterous accumulations of wealth. There's no justice. The exportation of justice is, in fact, in the example that Iran is capable of giving as Iran develops the resistance economy.
The book, to be translated into multiple languages, picks up on two open letters penned by the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, in the wake of a rise in terrorist attacks in 2015, among them the Charlie Hebdo attack in Paris, which fueled Islamophobia in the West.
Islamophobia started immediately after Islamic Revolution in Iran. Although it surprised many in the world, they didn't have any strategy or plan, following which several false flag operations were created to damage the image of Islam. And it was necessary then to address the issue.
In those letters circulated widely online, Ayatollah Khamenei urged Western youth not to believe prejudiced portrayals of Islam by Western mainstream media or people in power, but to keep an open mind and judge the Muslim faith fairly.
The Muslim community are kind and peaceful people, and it's ridiculous to prejudice a whole huge community just because of the actions of one or two people that aren't following the faith that so many of them believe in, and that it's unfair.
More than anything, Professor Shakespeare's book is an economist's view on some of the biggest issues facing humanity, from the vices of capitalism to climate injustice, and whether Islam is the answer. The final chapter envisages the makeup of a true Islamic economy.
At the heart of an Islamic economy is the use of money, which is genuinely interest-free, not pretend. And when you understand that, when you understand that money is today created out of nothing, the way is open. A massive supply of interest-free money, as long as it goes out and is repaid and cancelled. And you can use it in countless ways.
In a world where Islamophobia, as well as economic and other injustices, are on the rise, Professor Shakespeare argues there is a need for a new reset, a paradigm shift. And it's exactly that paradigm shift, he proclaims, that terrifies the West. Saeed Pourreza, London.
The Syrian Foreign Ministry calls for the withdrawal of U.S. and Turkish forces from the northern parts of the Arab country. It also condemned the deaths and destruction caused by Daesh terrorists and the so-called Syrian Democratic Forces in Hasaka province. The ministry accused U.S. forces as well as Daesh and SDF terrorists of actions that amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity. The Damascus called on international aid organizations, including the UN Refugee Agency, to provide assistance to displaced Syrians. It also urged the UN Security Council to fulfill its responsibilities in maintaining international peace and security and protecting defenseless civilians. The Daesh terror group has recently carried out two attacks, one in Syria and another in Iraq. This many regard to be an attempt to reorganize and rebuild its structure. The group was eliminated back in 2017, but what has really caused the group's resurgence and what can be done to tackle its rise? That and more in the following report.
On Friday, the Daesh terror group staged an attack on an army base in Iraq's eastern province of Diyala, leaving at least 11 soldiers dead. The attack happened overnight, and many, including Iraqi provincial officials, blamed the army for being caught unprepared. This has been the deadliest operation the terrorist group has launched in Iraq so far this year. Last month, the terror group killed 10 people in a northern village following an October raid that left 11 people dead and several wounded in a village in Diyala. A day prior to the Friday attack in Iraq, Daesh terrorists launched another assault, this time in Syria's northeastern province of Hasaka. It was an attempt by the group to help freeze prisoners held by the U.S.-backed Kurdish-led Syrian forces, or SDF. Over 20 Kurdish security forces were killed in the attack. Several civilians also lost their lives. The Daesh terror group was almost eliminated in Iraq and Syria in 2017, but pockets of the group remained in the two countries. The foreign-backed militants have carried out regular attacks against Kurdish and government targets in Syria since the rump of its territory was overrun on the banks of the Euphrates in 2019. In recent months, the group's sleeper cells have become more active in both countries, claiming attacks that killed scores of Iraqis and Syrians. In Syria, most of such operations have been launched against military and oil installations, but the Hasaka prison attack could mark a new phase in the group's resurgence. Security forces warn that Daesh will continue to regroup to stage even more deadly attacks, while senior military commanders are concerned that the raids may further expand in the region. But what is really behind the rise of Daesh again? In Syria, the group maintains presence in desert hideouts in the country's east, where U.S. forces are also stationed. This, as the Syrian government is only supported by its allies to fight the terror group, while the international community has failed to provide any assistance in the fight. And as to Iraq, the U.S. claimed to be there to stand strong against Daesh, yet again it failed to do anything concrete to prevent the group's resurgence and its terror attacks. However, it seems clear that the popular groups in Iraq and Syria, who played a crucial role in defeating Daesh back in 2017 in the absence of the international community's contribution, can once again bring the terror group to its knees.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump on Saturday, 15th of January, claimed that white people are being discriminated against and sent to the back of the line when it comes to receiving COVID vaccines and treatment. The article you're about to hear has been written by journalist Natalie Colarossi, writing for Newsweek magazine. The piece is titled, Trump Claims White People at the Back of the Line for COVID Vaccines and Treatments. Thank you. Former U.S. President Donald Trump on Saturday, 15th of January, claimed that white people are being discriminated against and sent to the back of the line when it comes to receiving COVID-19 vaccines and COVID treatment. Speaking during a rally in Florence, Arizona, Donald Trump alleged that coronavirus vaccines and treatments are being unfairly rationed and withheld from white Americans in some states. Trump said, "The left is now rationing life-saving therapeutics based on race, discriminating against and denigrating white people to determine who lives and who dies." Trump said during his speech, "You get it based on race. In fact, in New York State, if you're white, you have to go to the back of the line to get medical help. If you're white, you go right back to the back of the line." The former president's comments came in reference to a recent New York State policy that allows healthcare providers to consider race as a risk factor when administering limited supplies of antiviral treatments to those who are most in need. That policy states that non-white race or Hispanic Latino ethnicity should be considered a risk factor due to long-standing systemic health and social inequities that increase the risk of severe illness and death from COVID-19. The guidelines come after the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, found that Hispanics or Latino people are 2.1 times more likely to die from COVID-19 than white people, while African American people are 1.9 times more likely to succumb to the virus. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, has also found that certain ethnic and racial minority groups are less likely to receive outpatient antiviral treatment than white people. Furthermore, in nearly half of U.S. states, black and Hispanic vaccination rates are lagging behind white vaccination rates by at least 10 percentage points or even more, according to Bloomberg News Agency. Donald Trump, however, exaggerated New York's guidelines on Saturday, 15th of January, by incorrectly claiming that white people are not given proper treatment in comparison to people of color. "If you're white, you don't get the vaccine, or if you're white, you don't get the therapeutics. It's unbelievable to think this, and nobody wants this. Black people don't want it, white people don't want it, nobody wants it," Donald Trump added during his speech, prompting some of his supporters to cheer him. The Florence, Arizona rally marked Donald Trump's first big public event of 2022. Donald Trump also lavished praise on all speakers at the rally, who made a point of emphasizing his point about alleged widespread election fraud during the November 2020 presidential election. In other parts of his speech, the former president continued to push unfounded claims that the 2020 presidential election was stolen due to voter fraud, while also slamming President Joe Biden and railing against his COVID-19 mandates.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and on the eve of the blessed birthday anniversary of the Holy Prophet's Immaculate Daughter, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, let us hear some interesting words from this Lady of Light about the purpose of creation by God Almighty. "He originated things, but not from anything that existed before them, and created them without examples to follow. Rather, he created them with his might and dispersed them according to his will. Not for a need did he create them, nor for a benefit for him did he shape them, but to establish his wisdom, bring attention to his obedience, manifest his might, lead his creatures to humbly venerate him, and to exalt his decrees.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Sheikh Javed Akbari, the researcher on Islamic studies from Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You're welcome to For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. Well, brothers and sisters, we are going to talk about trust and peace of mind. We know that we need trust and peace of mind together in order for us to live a happy life and a better life in this society. Because unless we build trust and unless we have peace of mind, we will not be able to live a life characterized by happiness, by well-being, by prosperity, and by peace of mind, by stability, and so on and so forth. And of course, man needs stability more than any other thing in his life, because his life is unstable, but he needs to build and create stability in his life. And obviously, those who engage themselves struggling to achieve goals without having a stable life, they will face failure and defeat in their lives. In fact, as one's responsibilities increase, his need for stability and assurance also increases. Given this fact, it becomes the duty of everyone to learn how to avoid anxiety and what measures he need to gain peace of mind, to gain stability and a life characterized by tranquility and happiness. When we speak of tranquility, when we speak of happiness, we do not mean happiness gained by wealth, by material gains, and happiness gained by fame and other things which are materialistic, of course. Because there is no doubt as to the fact that struggling to acquire wealth, power, and fame and other material gains does not ensure happiness in our life. No matter what you do and no matter how much you struggle, all efforts made in this path will go to waste, because man's happiness lies in his own soul, just as his misery lies deep in there, you know. In other words, I would like to say that wealth, power, fame, and material gains do not ensure happiness. They do not earn an individual quality life. No matter how much wealth he gains, no matter how much fame he gains, and no matter how much reputation he builds, his happiness is not in these things. So it is in his soul, it is in his conscience. And medicine, according to Imam Ali, the commander of faithful, peace be upon him, is within man's own soul. The cure is within his soul. So we cannot find the cure and the medicine outside the human soul. It is within the human soul. Of course, the outside influences cannot ensure human happiness and cannot guarantee a better life. Money, wealth, and accumulation of these things cannot earn you happiness and salvation, because these are temporary things, and it is impossible that you achieve satisfaction with wealth and accumulation, because the more wealth you gain, the more money you accumulate, the greedier you become. And it is in the nature of such things. In addition, these things are temporary. They are not, permanent. And therefore, they do not lead to complete satisfaction. Let's have a break. We will be back.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand there crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Happiness and good luck do not lie in power and ability as well. And they do not bring stability, they do not bring peace of mind, they do not create trust as well. There have been many people in the history who had actually power, who had the ability, but they lived miserable lives. Happiness does not lie in wealth and large amounts of money. There have been many rich people who were not happy even though they had vast wealth and treasures, you know. Even today we come across many rich people, many wealthy people who have bungalows, who have markets, who have luxurious cars and houses, and who have luxurious lives, yet they live miserable lives. Their lives are full of tension, their lives are full of anxiety and full of apprehension. Their lives are characterized by uneasiness, by restlessness. Happiness also cannot be achieved by governmental power, by having governmental post or a political position. No. The Roman Caesars were unhappy despite their great power. They were the most powerful people of their times, you know. They did not live a happy life. Actually, happiness cannot be achieved by acquiring all these things, all what I mentioned, you know. Many people have had all the benefits of wealth, power, and fame, and so on and so forth, but they were not happy. The conclusion that I would like to draw is that man has to search for the means of real happiness in his own soul and in his own conscience. We must understand that the rapid increase in machinery is not enough to bring us a worry-free life, a concern-free life. The new machinery, the new advancements that we have made or that humanity has made is unable to reduce the amount of suffering in the world. We witness in today's life, man's life is full of, you know, machinery. We have everything that we need in our life. But even then, the sufferings of humanity have not decreased. There are new problems, there are new challenges and uncertainties in our life. And of course, in order to free ourselves from the continuous suffering of life, we definitely and we urgently need rightly guided minds. Just as the human mind, it has been actually able to bring about many advancements in our material living, it's also able to secure human happiness and a better life. So if you are looking for happiness, you should look it in your soul, in your mind. And it is here that the power of thinking becomes clearly manifested and shows its astonishing influence on man's life. So, in fact, those whose thinking abilities grow to become the center of their existence can steadfastly stand in the way of infliction when it befalls them by adopting a positive outlook and therefore by building trust and peace of mind. Because when your mind is at rest, you will have an easy life, a better life. We need trust, we need positive thinking, and we need peace of mind, these should exist together in order for us to live a peaceful life. And peace of mind is the most important asset that we can have in our life. Unless we have peace of mind, we will never be able to live a prosperous, a happy life, a life divine and free of sufferings. Sufferings are there, but happiness will not be there unless we have peace of mind. That's all for this session. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Traveling around the world is a wish a lot of people have, but never actually get around to it. However, this Belgian-British girl has achieved that feat at only 19. Zara Rutherford flew back home on Thursday to a crowd made up of family members, friends, fans, and journalists. She completed her odyssey after just over 5 months traveling over 52,000 kilometers. Zara is the youngest female in the world to fly around the globe. She achieved this using a micro light aircraft, which weighs only 325 kilograms and has very low fuel consumption.
The plane obviously is a bad for the environment. I'm not trying to claim that it is, but I have chosen one of the best aircraft to do it with. The fuel consumption is amazing. For this whole trip, it's used the same amount of fuel as a Boeing uses in about 10 minutes. For the whole trip around the world, which I think puts things into perspective. Obviously, it is bad, but I'm really trying to minimize my impact as much as possible.
Zara says the scariest part of her trip was flying over the frozen expanse of Siberia, a place with no human habitation close by. The teen adventurer also had to deal with different countries' health restrictions. Zara had to take multiple PCR tests on her journey, while China's COVID-related regulations meant she could not use the country's airspace. Now Zara says she is glad she can stay in one place for a few months. Who knows what her next adventure will be? The Chinese New Year is less than 2 weeks away, and millions of people around the world are in festive mood. In Vietnam, people are preparing to buy each other a special gift. Since this year's animal zodiac sign is a tiger, figurines shaped like the animal are in high demand. The Vietnamese are making, selling, and buying gold-plated tiger models to commemorate the New Year. Making these sculptures is a lengthy and difficult process. It usually requires clay and copper, which are painted, gilded, and polished before being covered with 24-karat gold sheets. People tend to purchase these gifts for the luxury they evoke.
Possessing a zodiac animal model made with precious material such as gold would mean its owner is in the high class in society and is successful economically.
The gold-plated tiger model will firstly bring a luxurious feeling, and secondly, this tiger with wings model shows my hope for my works to take off and have some breakthrough in the new year.
The intricate artworks find their way to gift shops all over Vietnam. They usually sell for between $300 and $3,000. Disability is not an obstacle to success. A group of Japanese with disabilities has proved it as they create incredible handicraft and make a living this way. A shop called Amayaka offers the items made by these disabled individuals. Located in a Tokyo neighborhood, it showcases products ranging from scarves and bags to glassware and colorful cards. Mayaka and all other workshops are part of a new movement aimed at promoting works of people with impairment. In just one of the workshops cooperating with Mayaka, about 20 disabled people are working over there. However, organizers of the movement say these people are still invisible in the society and are not paid fairly for their works despite being experienced in craftsmanship.
Some workers here have a career of more than 30 years. They have been weaving since their school days. They are so experienced that we should refer to them as artisans.
The organizers say they hope that their initiative will promote the works of the people with disabilities and help the society to start thinking about the way disabled workers are being treated. Turtles get a second chance to spread their fins after being found with bellies full of plastic. They were rescued and are now being released back to the sea in Argentina. Two green turtles and four loggerhead turtles were saved from fishing nets in Buenos Aires province. The group was taken to Grupo Marina Foundation, where they recuperated after purging 10 types of plastic from their bodies. Rehabilitation of the turtles lasted over a month and included blood tests and other procedures to make sure they were free of plastic. A biologist with the foundation says the danger of plastic is that it's silent, and usually its dangers are so gradual that it goes unnoticed.
Many times the animal appears to be in perfect health. However, during the checkup and evaluation, we found a large amount of this material inside. So it is important to get rid of the plastic before the condition worsens and it ends up causing the deaths of the specimens.
The turtles had mistakenly eaten plastic, thinking it was food. Wind, waves, and sunshine break down discarded plastic into tiny pieces, which litter ocean waters. Much of this plastic waste can be found on beds of seaweed that turtles forage for food. This trash ends up fatally clogging their bellies, causing the decline in the population of this graceful reptile.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The Indian administered Kashmir has the world's only floating post office. A 200-year-old houseboat on a famous Dal Lake in Srinagar. Set up during the British rule in India, the post office has survived throughout the years because of its charm. Our correspondent Shahana Bhatt has more.
The Indian-administered Kashmir was once a princely independent state, out of bounds for outsiders. As the ruler of Jammu and Kashmir disallowed non-locals to own property in this picturesque region. During the British rule in the Indian subcontinent, many Britons tried to find an alternative way of living in Kashmir. Thus, houseboat on the world-famous Dal Lake came into existence. Today, the lake is a home to hundreds of such boats, which are a major attraction for tourists around the globe. This one is a unique boat, the only floating post office in the whole world. This is a 200-year-old boat built by the British. It has truly stood the test of time, as it still functions.
Post office, Dal Lake.
This is not an ordinary post office. We're standing on a heritage property. I've enjoyed my work since the very first day I came here. It's a unique experience to be working here. And every day, I get the chance to meet people from different corners of the world.
The vault is not limited to postal services. It also has a small museum where colorful stamps from the 1980s are put to display, along with a collection of rare philately stamps. The post office is a hot tourist destination in the region. Locals also come to this post office to send postcards to their loved ones, inviting them to visit Kashmir.
Floating post office.
In the age of technology, electronic mails, e-cards and other internet applications have made it extremely easy for people to communicate. But sending a postcard from this floating post office gives one a really different feeling.
The floating post office underwent reconstruction in 2011 and is currently a part of the Indian postal system. Recently, the office started offering banking services, thus attracting more locals.
I have opened an account here for my daughter. It's hassle-free and this place suits my mind. It's not like the usual offices. Visiting this place with kids is like a trip.
Yet another attraction of this post office is this souvenir shop, from where everyone can buy postcards, stamps, traditional crafts and greeting cards.
This floating post office in Kashmir's Dal Lake is like a time machine. It brings people back to 2 centuries ago and shows them the history of the beautiful region. Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Now let's go to Germany to hear the heartwarming story of how technology is turning a young boy's life around. 7-year-old Joshua has a severe lung disease which has made him unable to go to school. But now he can attend his classes from home with the help of an avatar robot. The device sits in Joshua's Berlin classroom, enabling him to listen to the classroom in real time to what his teacher and classmates are saying. Joshua can even interact with everyone else by making the robot display a blinking signal.
Each year, a village in Vietnam becomes awash in red and orange as it gears up for the Lunar New Year with spectacular mass production of incense. January is usually the busiest time when villagers are dyeing, drying and whittling bamboo bark to make the fragrance sticks. Also, the scent of each batch is carefully tailored to suit the tastes of the regions where they will be sold. Most households here are involved in this ancient trade and sales are a major part of their livelihoods. The Lunar New Year will begin on the first day of February. Around this time, sales tick up with throngs of people crowding into temples to light incense during worship. A 3-year-old girl from China's Hebei province has astonished ski enthusiasts with an impressive snowboarding talent.
Hello everybody, I'm Wang Shishi. I'm 3 years old and I can snowboard now.
Shishi's skills have attracted a lot of attention as a toddler boldly tackles the slopes. She makes snowboarding look easy. Despite her tender age, she is already taming the slopes at a higher skill level than a number of other aspiring snowboarders. Her parents say she has been practicing for less than 2 weeks and her progress is startling.
I remember several years ago, I felt quite scared when I was on the advanced slope, but her mother told me that Shishi started to snowboard down right when she got to the advanced trail. She was not afraid at all.
Her parents say she quickly grasped the snowboarding movements and techniques, including some of the trickier swivels and turns. They say Shishi is enjoying the progress she is making on the slopes, and every chance she gets, she asks to go snowboarding. The young snowboarder's mum says the hobby has also brought the family closer together as they enjoy a shared passion together.
The chronic shortage of human organs has always been an issue for patients, especially those suffering from heart diseases.
But now a major scientific breakthrough is in the making. U.S. surgeons have successfully implanted a heart from a genetically modified pig into a man. Doctors had said the patient, 57-year-old, was unable to have human transplant because of his health conditions. But now he is recovering from his latest surgery. The surgeons say the man is being carefully monitored to determine how the new organ is performing. But for those who want to know why pigs, here is why. Pigs are considered ideal donors because of their size and rapid growth, among other things.
You know, it is a game changer because, you know, now we will have these organs readily available. If this works, and, you know, and I hope it will work, we'll have these organs available. We can, you know, we have the technique of genetically modifying. So if there are more tweaking required for modifying the genes, we will be able to do that. And, you know, can you know, customize basically the heart for, or the organ for the patient.
The transplant is the first of its kind in the world and follows years of research. In the U.S. alone, about 110,000 people are currently waiting for an organ transplant. Also, more than 6,000 patients die each year before getting one. Kingdom of Ice and Snow. Don't be surprised. It's an international sculpture festival held annually in the Chinese city of Harbin. This year, the venue brims with sports elements in a runner-up to the 2022 Winter Olympics scheduled in Beijing. The annual Winter Festival is the largest of its kind, where sculptors spend weeks using ice and snow to create structures under a given theme. The upcoming Winter Games is the theme this year, as one can visualize giant statues of Bing Duanduan. The adorable panda mascots are major attractions of the exhibition. The chief designer says an ice tower standing in the center of the park features 24 vertical structures, referring to the 24th Winter Olympics.
In terms of the design concept, the sculpture features 24 vertical structures, referring to the 24th Winter Olympics to be held in Beijing. The spiral array form also indicated the proactive spirit of the Olympics. The free and upward effect is a vivid presentation of the Olympic flame.
The annual festival, which is being held for about 3 decades, usually attracts domestic and foreign tourists. But COVID-19 restrictions have limited the crowds over the past couple of years. Harbin is located in northeast China and receives cold winter wind from Siberia. An average winter temperature there is around minus 17 degrees Celsius.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
the limelight.
A few weeks ago, Benjamin Netanyahu, former Israeli Prime Minister, brazenly said that Tel Aviv didn't have to abide by the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, as it was not a signatory to the deal. The article you're about to hear has been written by Julia M.K., a Beirut-based analyst, writer, and political commentator. The article has been taken from the website of Press TV, and it's titled, Iran Won Fair and Square. A few weeks ago, Benjamin Netanyahu, former Israeli Prime Minister, brazenly said that Tel Aviv didn't have to abide by the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, as it was not a signatory to the deal. Since 2015, Israel has taken full advantage of its leverage over the United States, the European Union, and the IAEA in attempting to sabotage Iran's nuclear energy program. Yet all attempts have failed miserably, from assassinating four Iranian scientists between 2010 and 2012, and key Iranian figures such as General Qasem Soleimani or scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, attempting to launch Stuxnet cyber attacks on critical infrastructure. All measures have backfired onto the Zionist entity, bringing about even worse repercussions for the European Union and for the United States. By America's own admission, there has been no evidence of Iran's non-compliance throughout, particularly at the time of the illegal U.S. withdrawal from the agreement. There wasn't any doubt that Iran has played by the rules throughout the entirety of the diplomatic process. The European Union and the United States expressed disappointment, not because of any lack of cooperation from Iran, despite being demonized for abiding by the terms of the U.S.'s own deal, but rather the futility of bringing Iran into a renegotiated deal. Iran's chief negotiator, Ali Bagheri Kani, made it clear on 11th of December that nothing less than the JCPOA in its complete form will be agreed upon. Iran has presented two draft documents based on a policy of guarantee and verification, a reasonable demand following the Biden administration's attempts to renegotiate following illegal 2018 sanctions placed by the Trump administration that ripped apart the deal in the first place. Yet the United States could not return with one counter-proposal or bring its own draft to the negotiating table, leaving its claims on Iran's level of compliance baseless. Rather, it is continuing to be steward of a coerced intimidation and threat approach. Israel's inability to cope with the futility of its loss flew Israeli Minister of Military Affairs Benny Gantz and Israeli President Isaac Herzog to Washington on 5th of December to push an ultimatum on Biden by December 9th. Attack Iran through cyber attacks or even a military strike on its regional allies or with more sanctions. Benny Gantz boasted to the Americans that he had ordered an attack on Iran, a move even the United States knows to be futile. A military attack would result in not only a legitimate retaliation from the Iranians and all regional resistance forces, which would easily defeat the Israeli regime, but also allow Iran to do so without losing its entire